listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Your host of the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this amazing interview with an awesome artist, singer-songwriter, December Fades. How are you?
I'm great, man. How are you?
My first question is, I know your name is Kevin, but how did you come up with December Fades?
Well, it was a band that I played in many moons ago that is defunct, and then I later took the name on because it just... I was about to release a song, and that name just kept coming up. I was like, am I going to release it under my name, or should I do a band name? And then that name, it just really started resonating with me. Originally, it was just a cool name, but then it was like, you know what? It's like December fades into January. It's a new year, new beginnings, new hope, new start, you know, so that... You know, you go from darkness to light. So it's like, I just really resonated with that. And everyone loves the name.
I love it too. I love it. And December's my favorite month because I was born in December. I've told you this. Right. And I had you on my songwriter in the round in the month of December because of your name.
Right. That's right.
So yeah, it's a very cool name. But I don't think I ever asked you why you call yourself December Fades. Now, where did you grow up? And what was the moment of Zen that made you want to become an artist?
I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio.
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, man.
North Olmsted, actually.
If there's okay.
Any NO people. I just fell in love with music from the start. I mean, from a little kid, just like listening to the radio and, you know, in the back of the car, parents playing the radio and just vibing with the songs. And my brother was real into Metallica, and I was running around dancing to Cars, and I didn't know it was a possibility at that time because we didn't have many musicians, so it was like that was like not even a reality at all. But then I think in middle school there was a new band that started, and they had their own songs they made, and I was like, what, you can write your own music? And that blew me away. And we had a show in my basement, and it was filled up with, like, you know, 50 or 75 middle school kids. And we were all just rocking out in the basement. And I was hooked. I was like, man, I want a band. I want to do this, you know. I had the drums, but it was like then it became serious, you know.
So was it a friend that made you want to pick up an instrument then? Was it this band in particular?
Yeah, I mean, just the fact that they were this young and could make original music, it was like blew my mind. I just thought, I don't know why, but in my mind, like every song had been written and it's like done and it's not even a reality. It's like, you know what I mean?
Right.
And then when I figured out, wait, anyone can do this, it was like, it blew my mind. I was just like...
Well, what's also cool, it's like when like there's a mystical... like element of music when you're a kid and you hear something recorded and you see something live.
Right.
And then when you see somebody like a peer doing it, you're like, oh my God, it almost gives you the liberty to pursue it. And I think that's awesome because that's what every good band should do. It should unlock something in somebody to make them want to pick up an instrument, to make them want to sing, to make them want to write. So it's, did you ever keep in touch with those guys? Because obviously they were a major influence without you even knowing it.
No. Actually, one of the guys moved out here and he came to one of my shows.
Oh, that's cool.
That was cool. It was like a full circle, you know. hold on. I hear something. There's something talking to me. Siri.
Siri's like, what's going on? I want to get in on this.
Maybe I'm hearing the neighbors. I don't know. Okay. Anyways.
So what instrument did you start with first? Did you start with drums? Did you start with guitar, piano?
So, well, I was playing in middle, actually, elementary school. What am I hearing? It's distracting me. Sorry. Sound.
Right. No problem. Yeah, I'll do the same
thing. Any little sound, I'm like.
It's like that's the only thing that can really make me uncomfortable. It's like if there's sound that's annoying me, I'm the same way. So that's the woe of the musician right there.
Maybe I should throw in my headphones. One sec.
No worries. Well, I'll just stall. Well, how y'all doing?
What was that question again?
I was saying, what did you start with? Did you start with drums? You start with guitar, bass? Yeah.
I actually started on saxophone, believe it or not.
Wow.
In elementary school, like fifth grade, we got to choose. Let me plug this in. One sec. Talk?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
I got you.
All right.
This will be much better now. I can
focus.
So I started out with saxophone. My older brother played it, and I was like, "Oh, that's cool! You know, I want to be like that." And then my mom played piano. She had an upright, and it was just, you know, she would just play these Chopin pieces and whatever. And I was just like, I was in love with it, you know. And then I was like, Show me how to do that, you know? And I just had her place my fingers, or I'd watch her and then imitate it. And then before you know it, I was like playing, pieces that she learned, and it was really cool.
Did you start with classical then?
Kinda, yeah. Yeah, there was a few, can't remember the names of the pieces, but occasionally I hear them in movies. I'll be like, I learned that song when I was like 12, you know.
So. You know, it's funny. It's like I started singing classical music, and then I took piano lessons, and they were teaching me piano, like classical piano. So I was learning almost too much classical. But I remember when my piano teacher would start playing like a boogie oogie, you know, like some kind of like blues progression. I was like, whatever that is, that's amazing. But I stopped piano, and then I listened to the Beatles. And they actually got me back into piano. I was like, you know what? I'm going to learn these tunes because the Beatles are the most amazing thing ever, you know? So I kind of credit like the Beatles making me want to go back to play piano. But I think all of that classical music, it's like such good technique. It just gives you a foundation. So did you find that you started learning pieces like that, and then it gave you kind of like the freedom to explore and kind of like start writing right away? Or did you kind of start learning more pop songs and rock songs?
I was kind of just composing my own little things. I mean, I didn't consider myself a composer or anything. I was just noodling around, but finding like really pretty things, or, you know, just riffs that I would vibe with that sounded, I don't know, classical-ish. And, then later I started taking writing more seriously and started writing with the band, and I was into like heavier stuff at the time, Tool, and
I still love Tool. There's still
Pantera and all. Like, as a drummer, especially, it was fun to play the heavy stuff. And
is that when you started gravitating towards drums? When you started listening to something?
Yeah, I was, I think, in seventh grade when I got my drum set, and I was like, Lars Ulrich. You know, I learned From Whom the Bell Tolls.
That's awesome.
The Bell Tolls was my first drum song I learned, and it was so cool. I'd just blast the stereo and play to it and be like, why is the timing off? You know what I mean?
Well, it's funny that you're probably a much better drummer than Lars now, you know, because I know you've seen all the videos of people making him a poor guy. It's just like, he's just trying to do his best, and like, you know, he's an epic band, but man, the amount of YouTube videos on him just being a bad drummer, they're kind of funny. It is kind of funny.
I mean, he is kind of sloppy, but he has influenced a lot of people, and he came up with those parts, and, you know,
Yes, yes, I agree. I totally
not everyone agree. Has to be, you know, Danny Carey or Neil Peart or, you know, right. what I mean?
Well, and you also played drums, you know, with a good friend of both of ours, Marcus yeah. Eaton, who is also a terrific musician and singer-songwriter. When did you kind of like collaborate with him? When did that kind of collaboration start?
So I think that was 2007 or 8, and I was running sound at Genghis Cohen in L.A., cool little music venue.
That's where I started, man.
And he was playing a show there, and like he was pretty much the only artist where I was like, wow, like this is fucking cool, you know?
Right.
And anything else, I was just bored to death. I was just right. like, man. I mean, I'm happy to mix it and whatever, but like nothing was resonating with me. When I saw him looping and like yeah. doing all these intricate rhythms and melodies and soloing and like these cool,
he's a great,
interesting
great
songs.
Writer and guitar player, like he's just yeah. he's a badass. Yes.
So I was like, hey, dude, if you ever need a drummer, you know, I'm down. And I was wearing, was it Tool? No, it was, what shirt was it? It was a Perfect Circle, I think. And he's like, oh, I love Josh Freese, that drummer. So he must be good. And I sent him me playing to his songs, and he loved it. And then we started, he would fly me out, and we'd do little short little tours and did some Dave Matthews side stage stuff and did a little tour with Tim Reynolds, TR3. It was really fun. It's cool.
That's amazing. That's yeah. Were you still writing your own stuff during all this, like this whole process?
No, I kind of let that fall. It was kind of sad. I went to MI. Well, I went to Cleveland State first, got my degree there. And I was like, okay, now I need to really focus on drumming. This is my specialty. So then I came out to LA and went to MI, and then it was like I thought I had to master it, and I couldn't be messing around with other stuff. So I kind of stopped writing for a number of years, and then played with Marcus, and that's where music became exciting again. But then I wasn't, other than rhythm, I wasn't really contributing anything, and then the boredom started hitting, and then I was like, I need something. I need melody. I need harmony.
Yeah.
So I finally went and bought a big keyboard, and then my good friend Kitch hooked me up with a bunch of plugins and sample libraries and Pro Tools, and I was like, I fell in love again. I was writing like these classical, like these like cinematic, you know, pieces, and I was like, wow, this is just, I was just really resonating with it. It was exciting and moving, and like, you know, you get to tell a story.
Were you playing all these other instruments like guitar and bass too? I see guitars and bass in your pad. So
yeah, I play guitar, and that's a brand new bass. Yep,
nice.
Yeah, that's a couple weeks old. Yeah, so then I was picking up guitar again. I mean, I played guitar in high school, and you know, wrote a lot of riffs with my band and contributed. It was like a band, you know, like
you got more sound.
I know where it's coming from. My light. Jesus. Okay, it's one of those lights with a bulb.
I'm like, this guy's got a lot of musical distractions.
It's my girlfriend playing on her phone, and it's
that's
playing
awesome.
In here. I had no idea where that was coming from. Like, yeah, that has funny. To be my neighbor. Someone's like,
I love that it was on camera. You were like, what? You're like, what is that?
I'm glad I figured it out. Very,
that was good.
Very distracted.
So you were playing all these instruments, and then where did you kind of like take the moment to like, no, I wanted to write on, you wanted to write on piano. Like, what was that moment for you? You said, I want to write on this instrument. This is going to be where I write most of my songs.
Well, you know, I'm an engineer and running sound. I was working at Room 5, another LA club.
Yeah.
Well, now defunct, but now it's kind of moved to Hotel Cafe where I also run sound. But I fell in love with it there because just all the different artists. I mean, at first it was like oh, I got to get like Nirvana unplugged and all these unplugged things to stay, to play in between. Cause I, you know, but then I was like listening to the songwriting and listening to, and I just fell in love with it. It was like almost more powerful when it's stripped down and intimate and like, just, yeah, you know, bringing it real close, like real dynamic where you're like whispering and it's just like, wow, this moment's so intense, but so like fragile. And so, you know what I mean? It's just, it's so powerful in a different way. And I just found that to be just incredible. And I fell in love with it. And then I'm like, maybe I can do this. So I just started writing again and then wrote a bunch of songs and we're like, maybe I could shop this to songwriters. And then I was like, you know what, maybe I could be the artist. And I just, that was never a reality. And then I was like, wait a minute, maybe I can. And I just gave it a shot. And then
that's awesome,
people liked it and responded, and I was like, I can do this, let's do it, let's release some music.
To use your guitar strap as an influence over your shoulder, the yin and yang for me is definitely being in a full band with lots of instruments and everybody jamming, and then solo acoustic or acoustic duo. Like, there's something about when an artist can do both that I find that so fascinating. And I think Kurt Cobain was one of the first for me. Like, you heard him play in a band, and then when you heard that Unplugged record, it was like, whoa. And then you know, Dave Matthews was an influence for me like that. Anytime anybody does like a full band set and then an Unplugged set, I'm like, you're the shit. And then you, and then you hear like people like Clapton doing it and like all these people that are finding it as a voice. And I'm like, it's always going to be a part. I think it's one of the ways artists can be the most vulnerable when you're able to show that and then show that, like, here are all the feathers in the peacock, you know, display. I think that's also cool too. So I love that that became an influence without you. It was indirect too, because you were and you were kind of like mixing coming from a heavier sound too. You start seeing like, wow, this is just as heavy, but emotionally.
It's
like awesome. So who were some of your most influential songwriters for, to capture some of that? Like, you know, you, you write like very moody, kind of like emotional, emotionally heavy stuff. Who are some of those writers? I saw in your bios, Radiohead, Portishead, all the heads, you know what I mean?
All the heads.
Who else was like a songwriter for you that you just, you kind of drew inspiration from?
I was loving Halsey. I mean, I still do. Like, just the way she rhymes and like just takes you through a story, and like, I just, it's dark. It's just like dark and sexy, and that, and Sia. I love hooks and like just really just memorable hooks that reel you in. But I want depth too, and those two artists have depth. You know, when it's too shallow and there's nothing behind it, and it's just like shaking their ass or whatever, it's hard to, I mean, it can be fun for like a dancing club thing, and every music has its place.
Right.
But like, I love when it's, when it, look, Teddy Swims. I mean, that's recent, but he's incredible, dude. So,
he's great.
Of his songs.
All those artists are like, melody forward, like pop writers, like really good. I had Greg Spiro, who plays with Halsey, on our show, and he was talking about how like they would collaborate when she was just like living in an apartment in New York. Like, he watched this rise of like how they kind of like started getting all this attention. But he said the most important elements were like melody, song structure, like making something that like felt good always, you know? And it's like, I love that those artists that you mentioned are all melody forward, story forward, production forward, because that adds to what you're doing. And tell me, like, when you're writing, how do you take those influences and kind of make it new for yourself, or make it, you know, kind of like a storytelling force for you?
Right. I mean, it influences me in an indirect way. You know what I mean? Like, whatever I'm listening to may show up as a influence, but I'm never like, let me make a song like that. I just like put my hands on my piano or my guitar and start playing. And like, I don't have anything planned out almost ever.
Let's play something. What do you want to play us first?
How about the newest release?
Yeah, which one is it?
It's Not Goodbye.
Not Goodbye. Here's Not Goodbye by December Fades.
The thought of leaving you all behind, it's really hard to do, but it's time. The thought of pulling through, soaring high, it's distant to be true. Watch me rise, let me go, let me shine. Let me go, let me shine. No, it's not goodbye. With your heart in mind, I could touch the sky. No, it's not goodbye. Goodbye. Every moment aligns like the ocean tide. Behind the memories made and found, your royal loyalty was a crown. So hard to let you go, cornerstone. You fill me up with hope, never alone. Let me go, let me shine. Let me go, let me shine.
Some like U2 influence a little bit, and then a little bit of 90s. Yeah, very, very cool. Tell me what the song's about to you, and what was the influence for you to write it?
Well, the influence, I mean, the reason was it was a sync brief, which is sync agencies are the middleman between the music supervisor and the artist and the film and TV. So I'm basically with these two companies, Accidental Entertainment and Make Sound. And one of them sent me a brief, and actually it was Accidental. It was for a possible Olympic commercial, which would have changed my life.
Wow.
But I got an amazing song out of it, and I was like, this deserves to be out there. So, and they wanted something that was like hopeful, but like, you know, it was just a bunch of emotions together, because you're like sending these Olympians off, like, you know what I mean? It's bittersweet, yeah. But it's hopeful, and it's like, all you're sad to see him go, but you're so excited. But I mean I was thinking about that, but thinking about my girlfriend, obviously. she's kind of my muse.
Well, it's also it's nice when you can take something and it can be ambiguous.
Yeah.
And also mean many different things to everybody. You know what I mean?
But yeah, it's nice to have those briefs from time to time because they really kick my ass into gear.
Right.
And make me finish. I need a deadline, and I can get that stuff out so fast. If I don't have a deadline, I'm like a perfectionist and get stuck, you know. But I love how it came out. It's just, I really resonated with it, and it's just a meaningful, deep message. And, you know, I think the production mirrors that, and yeah. Really and happy with it.
You did all the production, I assume, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So did you? Yeah, I heard some
guitar in there.
Yeah, I heard some like reverb effects and delays and stuff like that. Very, very cool. I loved it all.
Thanks, man.
Very, very cool. So when you're writing for, a sync placement, do you kind of like almost you aim for that, but then it's like it becomes part of your artist catalog.
Yeah.
Like, how do you kind of decipher which ones become part of your artist catalog, which ones you're like, I'll still try to sync this, because I do the same thing.
Yeah.
And it fascinates me, like what songs I'm like, no, I'm keeping this for me, and other songs I'm like, no, that can be for somebody else. You know what I mean?
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to choose. In a way, it's pushing the bounds, you know, my boundaries. Like, I'm like, oh, I'm this style. But now I've been doing like some more synthy stuff, more dancey stuff. I'm thinking about releasing that too, because I'm like, this is part of me. This is, you know, and they can still use it as a sync. It's just not for another artist, but so yeah, I want to evolve, and I can go wherever I want to go, and And I've always been in love with different styles of music and different genres and combining them. So, like, if I want to explore, you know?
I love that.
That's
because
what I'm going to do.
So. I feel like when I write, I'm like always, or especially when I'm making a record, I'm like, I'm always looking to show people my CD collection. Like, you love Sublime, or love Dave Matthews Band, or oh, you love the Allman Brothers, whatever it is. And it's like when people can get it, it's like, okay, I did my job. If I can show you my influences, but it's a new song, then it's like, okay, cool. That's the best. And it's funny because when you listen to some of your favorite artists, they're doing the same thing. They're just showing you, oh, this is what I love. And this is the style. And it became something new as a result. So I love that. Let's play something else. What do you want to play us next?
Let's do Sunrise.
Oh, nice. We have a mutual song called Sunrise. So
that's right. The
Summer Fades with Sunrise.
One day with you, nothing short of a miracle. Flying high, feeling spiritual. One day without you, oh my God, it's unbearable. So insane, I'm hysterical. Every day and night, I long for your love and light. Warm up my lonely life, just one more time. Infinite and invincible, sacred souls are unsinkable.
So beautiful. Was that in Kauai?
That was Kauai, yeah.
I just went to Oahu.
Nice.
The day before yesterday. So, like, man, I was like, oh, this is Hawaii. This is, like, the perfect timing for you to showcase that video, too, for me. Because I was like, oh, man, I just want to live there sometimes. Every time I go there, I'm like, why am I living on the mainland?
That's incredible, yeah.
So tell me about the inspiration to shoot this in Kauai, which is my favorite island, but tell me, like, what made it such an influence for you to shoot there?
Well, it just, I mean, it was way off my radar. That was not even a possibility, to be honest. But it happened. It manifested. Joel Umbau, the director, his mom actually had a timeshare there and wasn't using it. And he's like, hey, what do you think about shooting in Kauai, Hawaii? I'm like, hell yeah. So it all worked out. It was like post COVID. So tickets were dirt cheap, the plane tickets. Wow. And like, man, it was a lot of work, but it just worked out beautifully. Like, I mean, yeah, we were trying to figure out where to shoot it. Should it be urban? Should it be this or that? But he was like, if you're down with nature, man, Hawaii would be. And I'm like,
is he from Kauai or does he just love?
No, he just he travels. He loves it there. So,
yeah, I mean, it is my favorite island. It's awesome. It's just so pretty.
Yeah.
I mean, you can just find little pockets of places that nobody's around. That's what's so great. It's just, you know, there's a little bit of like exploration that comes with it, but
yeah
it's just so lush. And I was seeing all those rain clouds. It's funny because I brought my little travel guitar. It's right here, the little baby Taylor right here. What's funny is I was like, it was completely sunny and I started playing this song that like I've been piecing together, and then I saw all these rain clouds like moving in. And then I ended up writing a song about these rain clouds moving in. I was like,
nice.
This is one of the beautiful things about Hawaii. It just pulls things out of you because there's so many elements of nature around that you cannot be inspired as a writer. You know what I mean?
Right.
So my next question is, did you write when you were down there? Because I always seem to pop out a new tune when I'm down there.
There was no time. we were going hard every day. I mean, we would get up, try to get there by sunrise. And a lot of times we were a little bit late. So some of those are sunsets, whatever. Doesn't matter. But
nobody's going to be like, wait a minute.
That looks more like a sunset. And then, we just needed time to explore because it was really just guerrilla style. I mean, we were just like, yeah, this looks cool, or let's go here. Talk to the locals and what's a cool, you know, we found those waterfalls and man, so just picturesque, and I couldn't be happier, you know.
That's awesome.
It came out amazing. We won a bunch of awards at Film Fest, so like
that's amazing. Well, it paid off.
Seeing it on the big screen too was just magical, you know. So
those pinch me moments.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, this is crazy.
Yeah.
It's four.
Yeah, got to see it at the Chinese theaters.
Oh, wow.
It was That's like,
incredible.
Yeah.
That's so incredible.
Super cool. Yeah.
So when you were piecing together the video, what was the storyline, or what was the kind of like, you know, the concept of shooting it there? Like what drove you to kind of like create the story there?
It was just, I mean, we had this model and we had me and we had this love song. And we're like, how far do we want to take it? I mean, you see in the end, the surfboard is by itself. I mean, I guess most people didn't pick it up, but I was like, for me, I was like, oh, that's pretty dark. Like she died. She died on the, you know what I mean? In my mind, that's where it went. Like she died, but that's not really what the song was about. It was about gratitude and love and being present and just, you know, being in love with love.
And you're just like, I'm going to throw in a little death in there.
I mean, that was Joel's, I thought it was cool too. I mean, it's a cool ending. It's ambiguous. You don't really know like what it is. Did they break up?
Now we do because
are they taking a break? Are they having sex on the beach? Or you know what I mean?
It's right.
So yeah,
I like that you guys were like, no, she died.
She's dead. But so it leaves it open to interpretation. And it was just a story, you know, about it's just a relationship and right. memories and appreciating those times. And you don't really know where it's coming from right. or when it is, you know, but yeah.
And so. When you're writing, what do you draw from the most? Are you drawing from love? Are you drawing from like, being down, like trying to pull yourself up? Are you drawing from hearing something that somebody else is writing about and that sparks it, you? Tell me what it is.
It's mostly emotional. I mean, where I'm at, you know what I mean? And it's like sometimes I don't even realize I'm there until I start writing. And then I'm like, oh, okay, that's where I'm at, you know? Right. And it's like a lot of it is love. A lot of it's heartbreak or turmoil or inner turmoil, you know, just like the struggle or self-doubt, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Crippling perfectionism, all these things that are your enemy that keep you, you know, and then the chattering in your mind about like, oh, where I should be or comparing, you know what I mean? You can get in these cycles where you're like spiraling out. And like, I usually write around them. And that's really good.
Like songwriters, I find are my tribe because we're all figuring out all the things about life that matter to us.
Yeah.
Doing it through all the insecurities that life offers and is circling around our brains all the time. Mm-hmm. And then just like plowing through that with the songs as our like armor. It's like you're creating this armor every time with these songs.
Yeah.
And you're just plowing through it. And it's like, I find that kind of magnificent with all songwriters, because the coolest thing is, it's like when you see another songwriter doing the same thing, it just empowers you to keep writing. It's like,
Oh, yeah,
I want to just keep on writing because they figured out a bright, shiny new piece that I'm like, that's an awesome piece. Maybe I'll add that to mine and keep going through it. So there's like, there's this thing about like life that, you know, some people are channeling in different ways, but songwriters are putting their stories out there in a much more personal way that I just think, but it resonates with me. So I love that you're drawing from a lot of those same things and kind of like pulling them and channeling them into something else. Let's play something else. What do you want to play us next?
All right. Crash and Burn.
Ooh, there's a story here. Here's Crash and Burn by Semper Fates.
Good morning, Madeline. You're in my head again. Every dawning day unveils your face. Entrancing melody. I'm lost in memory. Your shadow set a hole in my soul. Crash and burn.
Story and the inspiration behind this song is.
Ooh, this was inspired by a short-lived relationship, like a probably 2 week or 3 week thing. That was just like, you know, you got those love chemicals this year. Like, ooh, you're just
right,
flying high, man. You know, you're on cloud nine, and then it's a rug pull, and then you're just like. Wow, everything's just taken away, and oh, I was heartbroken because, you know, I was just so excited, and I thought things were going to work out, and it felt incredible. I mean, just all the love chemicals going through my body, and then from that extreme created this song, you know, from that high to that, oh, the low was just so low, but it actually came from a dream, really. The melody, I woke up singing that, good morning Marilyn, like I just woke up and it was there, and I said it, and I had my piano like right by my bed, so I immediately played it and recorded that idea, and like, you know, it was just,
that's
like
awesome.
This is gold right here, you know what I mean? I knew it was like this haunting melody that was given to me via dream, you know what I mean, from
those are the best,
another
yes.
realm. So it was like it really happy with it. People really resonate with this song and love it, and anytime I sing it, I feel it, you know. Not every song you're like so committed, but like this one just takes me right there, and
I love it. And then what was the story with the video?
So the video, it's really cool. It is a true Hollywood story here. The girl in the video is my girlfriend.
I was going to ask that because
she was not my girlfriend at the time.
Okay.
Yeah, we were practically strangers. I mean, we were like, she had to like assure me it was okay to touch her and to grab her, and you know what I mean? She had to like direct me. And she was the director of the video, one of the directors, as well as the editor. And you know, the talent. I mean, she did an amazing job, and I was hooked. I mean, I was actually, we met at Molly Malone's 3 years prior. Okay. And she got invited to come up and dance on stage. And I was blown away and was like, damn, this girl is sexy. So I hopped out of my booth and was like, wow, you're amazing. Can I get your number? And got her number, and she never texted me back.
And, that's all right.
We were Facebook friends, and I would occasionally see these cute or sexy posts of her roller skating or dancing. And like 3 years later, I needed a model for the video, a dancer. And I was like, I know who I'm going to get. And she was, you know, she wasn't busy and was like, yeah, I'll help you out, you know? And, but she wanted to keep it professional. So she was like very resistant. So it was quite a challenge in the beginning. Cause I was like, hey, I'd like to buy you dinner for doing this and try, you know, and she'd be like, oh, let me give you the receipts for the stuff I got, you know, and she would just like play it off like she wasn't interested. And I mean, she was, but she was in her mind. I was everything. She was like, no, stay away. But right. Like, I wasn't the same dude as those other guys. You know what I mean? Right. I'm an individual and I've got my own story and she's got her own. And tomorrow, is it tomorrow? On the 5th, we'll have 7 years.
Wow, because, that's amazing. Congrats.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Thank you. I love that. And you know what? It was funny. I was watching when I saw the toe on the piano. I was like, I don't care how cute your foot is. Get that foot off my piano.
Hey, it wasn't my piano. So.
You're like, that's all right. That's all right. No. Yeah.
It was, I mean, she was dancing on top of that thing. We didn't include a lot of footage, but like when they weren't recording, they were trying to fix some issues. We were like jamming. I was just improvising. She was improvising, doing that's flips awesome. And spins. And like, I wish someone recorded all that magic, but
it always happens. The record button's not on when it should be. That's always
exactly.
Just how it
is. Yeah, that's so when a lot of the magic happens.
Like, yeah. People don't understand. Yeah. Like, so much of the magic is when it's not recording and it's happy to get something. You know what I mean?
Right.
So where can people find you if they want to find you online and follow your music? And where are you playing next?
Everything's just December Fades. So it was pretty easy. I pretty much got all those, you know, you can go to decemberfades.com and Instagram's just December Fades run together. Everything, X and what else? Facebook, all of it's, yeah. Right. You just look me up. I'm there. I'm on all the streaming platforms, and you saw my two main videos. There's a lyrical video and some other little content.
Awesome. Well, December Fades, thank you for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. We love your music. You're a great vibe, and thanks for all the music that you always throw down. We hope to hear more, and we're going to bring you back in about 9 or 10 months. So keep writing those songs.
Nice.
Keep putting more music out there. Put more music videos out there. And, man, keep inspiring all of us with your music and your sounds.
Thank you so much for having me. And it's always – you're so easy to talk to. And
thanks. Likewise.
Man, you're an amazing host. And
thanks,
thank
man.
You for letting me play your night and having me on the show.
Of course, we'll have you back. We'll have you back in all contacts. So, like, you know, it's always a welcome experience. On behalf of Sam, myself, and December Fades, we'll see you guys next week.
Mahalo.
Take care. Take care of each other. Peace. We out.
All right.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence. Right here on LA Talk Radio.